Yeah. Looks like they back for a fifth season, man.
Who that?
Sports Roundtable.
Who?
SRT Crew.
Whoa.
SRT. They got that realness flowing in their DNA. Damn you lame if you ain't tuned to SRT today. H.O. got that payload when he say so. What you betting on? Don't get mad at me on fantasy. Break up Kyrie LeBron. I be smooth as sports superhero Hancock in the mix. Deal with roll tie forever. Real talk, you know who he gon' pick. See where I be with SRT. Behind the glass, that G-Money. They with a strong, I never lose. Six man elite, that's Jay Smooth.
All you other sports radio shows, it's fake news. Believe it. Turn up your radios, cause it's time for SRT Radio.
Yeah.
What up, what up, what up? It's Sports Roundtable, live from the SRT Studios overlooking Atlantic Station. The hottest sports show on radio, Sports Roundtable, coming at you live each and every Wednesday from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to tune in, go to TuneIn Radio. Go to iHeartRadio. Go to srtradio.com and listen live. Give us a call if you want to be a part of the show, 404-603-8770. I am your humble host, H.O. from Bankhead. Of course, I got my main man in the building with me, sports superhero Hancock.
What's up, big homie?
From Memphis, Tennessee. What up, homie?
You got it.
And our other main guy is in Alabama in the gump still. He should be calling in pretty soon.
Well, they must have been celebrating down there.
He's on now? All right, D. Will, the coach. What up, D?
Yeah. What's happening?
What up, Weezy? Turn up, Weezy. Turn up.
Hey, so,
what's up?
Hey, listen, so you down there with this historic moment down there with Charles Barkley. I know you and Charles was probably out eating at, what's the real place we like to go to? Hancock?
Dreamland.
Yeah, I was down there at Dreamland, probably politicking about things of that nature. So, historic night last night. I'm pretty sure you're proud of all the votes that actually came in and things of that nature. Can you just touch on it just a little bit and how much I'm sure your dad is proud in yourself?
Well, yeah, man. I had to come into town and exercise the right. Last night was not only a big night for Alabama, it was a huge night for the whole United States of America, being that that was one of the most intensified races for the Senate that we've ever seen. And luckily, we came out on top with Doug Jones pulling out narrowly over Roy Moore. But hey, let me tell y'all this real quick. They were separated by 21,000 votes, okay?
21,000?
21,000 votes was all they were separated by. How about this? Nick Saban got 23,000 write-in votes. So Nick Saban is the difference in Roy Moore and Mr. Jones in the Senate race.
So he already won the championship.
He already won the championship.
Man, that is crazy. That's crazy. All right. We're cool, man. We'll hang on in there with us. We got some hot news coming up. And then we got our college football awards. That's going to be very, very exciting. Then we got some other news that we do want to talk about. But, of course, I can't continue to move forward without mentioning my main guy behind the glass, G-Money, doing his thing.
Yo.
And, of course, I do need to mention for all the old school Atlanta fans and Atlanta Braves fans, we are still peed off that Dale Murphy didn't get into the Hall of Fame. That is just absolutely not cool.
Are they expecting him to get new stats or something?
I just, Alan Trammell, Jack Mars, I can roll with. 254 wins, I can go with that. Alan Trammell, man, I just. 84 was his best year.
I mean, what do you think it is?
Murphy won back to back. Just the disrespect of Atlanta.
No, so you think it's all Atlanta based. It's nothing to do with anything they're holding against him.
Nah. I don't see how, granted, he's two home runs away from 300. But to win back-to-back MVPs with Atlanta at that time, I mean, that's monumental. Back to back. Which means that it's not a fluke.
Well, what have you heard has been the negatives, though? What? It's got to be drawbacks. What's the drawback?
I hadn't heard.
The advanced stats favor Trammell over Dale Murphy. Like the war. People keep using the war stat, even though that wasn't a. That's kind of what held Jack Morris back.
Right.
But he was a guy who would. He's going to pitch a lot of innings. I think one year he had 20 complete games, and no one else has had more than five like this past season. Right. No one pitches like that anymore.
Yeah, that's so. But anyway,
writers, man, it's got to be. Yeah, I mean, it's something to do with Murphy, man.
I don't know what it is. I refuse to read any of it, to be honest with you.
It's the Veterans Committee too. Well, now the Modern Era Committee, which formerly the Veterans Committee,
exactly. Second half of the show, we do have Deshaun Tate of 92.9 The Game coming in and talk college basketball with us. So that'll be fun. So he'll be back in studio. So you know it's going to be crunk once he get in studio because his team is up there now. Number one team in the land. So I know he's going to come in here pumping his chest. So, but with all that being said, it is now time to get to the hot news.
Blazing. Hot. Scorching.
On fire.
Red hot.
This is why I'm hot.
It's the Sports Roundtable Hot News.
Hot News sponsored by our good old friends at the Big Easy Grill. If you're looking for the best New Orleans seafood in town, please go over to the Big Easy Grill, 1193 Collier Road, Atlanta, Georgia. Best shrimp in town, and it is verified. And don't forget, this week, December the 16th, we are having SRT Saturday, so please come on out, have some fun with us, join us, eat some shrimp, po' boy, and some shrimp, catfish, nuggets, and all, because we'll be there.
You got something, though.
Crab claw?
What happened on the 15th, baby?
I was going to get to that.
Come on out and celebrate my birthday with
me. Come on out and celebrate Hancock's birthday. His birthday is on the 15th, so please come on out and celebrate with us, so we'll see if we'll have something that fun.
You gotta do all that.
Listen, I don't know if y'all remember last year for Hancock's birthday, what we did. I won't mention that.
There it is.
You already did.
Alright, first question. Alright, first question. Hancock, 4-5, 4-2-5. Former NFL players are being investigated for sexual harassment. Three of them currently work for the NFL Network. The other two work elsewhere. Thoughts?
Well, it's a different day and time. You know, a lot of things now that may have been overlooked in the past that you can say to a female, or maybe not just female, to anyone.
Anyone.
Can be construed as sexual harassment or some type of harassment. Anyway, in this case, Jamie Cantore, who is a former wardrobe stylist for the NFL Network, she's pretty much filed a case here against, from what I count, six guys that are either, like you said, still working with the NFL Network or formerly work for them.
Exactly.
The accusations or allegations go as far as, you know, unwarranted touching, pressing parts of your body up against hers, explicit text messages, and sexual innuendo. So, as we've seen, the people named in this complaint, Marsha Faulk, who was accused of, what they say here was, I think, speaking out of turn, I think is what he did to her. Ike Taylor actually supposedly or allegedly texted her some pictures of himself pleasuring himself in the shower. Donovan McNabb asked her.
Don't do it.
I'm not going to say it.
Don't do it. He sent some explicit text messages.
He asked her, could she do something with her body?
Oh, my God.
Which was just out of the way. And then, you know, a couple other guys supposedly did.
Heath Evans.
What did he do? He's made the derogatory comments to her. And Donovan McNabb, already mentioned Donovan McNabb. I'm sorry. That one just really got to me. Warren Sapp actually supposedly urinated in her presence. So all these things.
He's not even named in the lawsuit, though.
Right, but he's banged in some other stuff with
He just can't stay out of trouble.
So, I mean, the thing about it now, man, these things are way above things that, you know, can really be taken out of can really be brought about as harassment. These are definite harassment
issues. Oh, no doubt.
I mean, if these are true, there's no doubt about any of them. And I don't know. I think a lot of them, we probably have seen the last of them on some television, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Ike Taylor had just really transitioned from the football field up to, you know, being in front of the camera. So his career probably is over before it really even got started. And, you know, the NFL Network basically is like a springboard or supposedly a training or launching pad for bigger and better things.
Right.
And some of these guys may have, you know, pretty much have become household names. You think of Marshall Faulk and Heath Evans, they were kind of cornerstones of this thing.
Right.
You always saw them, you know. So for them to be caught up in this type of thing, look, it's a lot of things that go on. You better be real careful at any work position or whatever about what you say or how you interact with anyone now, because it can be taken to a different level. We see that with everyone except Suge Trump. He's about the only one that can get away with it. Suge Trump had 16 allegations, 16 women with various allegations, and nothing's happening from there.
And he's still president.
He's still president, and nobody even wants to say anything.
That's crazy.
We look at other guys, you know, we've seen from the entertainment field, they've lost their jobs. Other political figures have lost their jobs. So, you know, this thing is serious, man.
Yeah, it is.
It's getting more and more out there, so
I agree. Gotta
be careful.
All right, shout out to Marta Terry. He's on Facebook Live. Check us out.
What up?
D. Will, question number two. Baker Mayfield wins the Heisman as in a landslide, of course. We all said that he would. My question to you, do you admire his story as walking on twice to the football team, Texas Tech and Oklahoma, and what kind of NFL player you think he'll be?
Well, I do admire his story. Like you mentioned, he did walk on first at Texas Tech, left that program, and then went ahead and walked on at Oklahoma. And like I say, turned himself, including with Bob Stoops, turned himself into a Heisman Trophy winner. So you can only admire that. There's no way you can't admire that for somebody who has the fortitude and the wherewithal to stick with it, believe in his talents well enough to know, hey, I can play on this level and not give up and say, okay, I'm just going to play Division I AA or FCS is what they call it now. Now, what kind of NFL player he will be, that's still to be seen. He's not the prototypical NFL quarterback. He's listed at 6'1", but I think once he goes to the combine and we get all these measurements, I think he's gonna measure out at smaller than 6 feet. And with his style of play and what's going on with him right now, you can hopefully put him in a Russell Wilson mold. All right, but does he have the same athletic ability? Does he have the same escapability? Is he the same wizard that Russell Wilson is? That's yet to be seen. And for all accounts, we don't think he will be. So for his NFL, what he will be in the NFL, that's still up to be seen. We really don't know. I do think he should be a first-round pick because if Johnny Manziel and Tim Tebow were first-round picks, there's no way possible that this kid is not. So I think he will get chosen in the first round. Will he get to play immediately? I doubt it. It's all about system and fit and situation. But it's yet to be seen if he can turn out to be a formidable NFL quarterback or just a clipboard holder his entire career.
Okay, cool. All right, question number three, G-Money. The Ball Brothers has signed a deal, a one-year deal with Lithuania, whatever their name is. I don't know. But your thoughts, think it's a good move? What has LeVar done?
It can be looked at a couple of different ways. It can be looked at as a desperate move because he felt he needed to get them playing again. He was not satisfied with UCLA's indefinite suspension. Like he was saying, like why is LeAngelo still suspended?
Right.
You know, even people in China, they dropped the charges. Why is he still suspended? And then taking the things that were taken away from him, he couldn't practice. He couldn't go to games. Basically, it was like go to class and go back to the dorm. and that he already had taken LaMelo out of school, but he wanted to get them playing competitively again. And I think he felt he needed to do that as soon as possible. Another angle would be, well, this gets them playing professionally. They get used to professional life in some capacity. But from what I hear, they may only make $500 a game if they get paid at all. It's an interesting move. It's an unorthodox move.
Right.
And, I mean, some previous unorthodox moves have paid off, you know, with their own shoe line and taking LaMelo out of school. You know, it didn't seem like such a bad idea. But I read the article to where this is gonna be good for LaMelo, but not so good for LiAngelo. Like, all he can do is shoot. He can't go off the dribble. He can't defend anybody. He plays below the rim. They basically gave the scouting report in that article. So I don't know how it's going to work out for him. Hopefully he learns not to steal anything. I don't know if there's anything to steal in Lithuania, really.
Yeah, and then the head coach supposedly can't speak English. It's a language barrier. So it could affect their playing time because can't speak English.
The coach of that team, he is like, compared to LeVar Ball, because his son is on the team, so wow. It'll be interesting to see how that works out. And if there's a reality show, then you know everyone will get to see a lot of it.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, we'll see. All right, Han. Unfortunately, Wentz goes out. Carson Wentz trying to score, trying to do it for the team, and. He will be out for the rest of the season. So the Eagles, it forces Nick Foles into the starting lineup as the quarterback. My question is, can the Eagles win with Foles after Wentz goes down?
Yes, they can win with us. The thing about it is, we look at the Philadelphia situation, and you have to look at the team concept. This team now, it has wide receivers, it has a run game, it has a big-time defense. The thing with the offense now, you might not be able to do everything that you did with Wentz, but you can tailor the offense to maximize Foles' strengths.
Right.
And I think you'll probably at least start out using your run game more. You still got a quality tight end. You actually got two, if you saw what happened with Trey Burton this weekend. So with he and Ernst, and then you have the wide receiver positions with the run game. It's just a well-rounded offense that I think that they'll survive and I think even thrive in some situations. If you look at what Foles can do, I think his best season, he had 27 touchdowns, only two interceptions, which still ranks, I think, as the best season all time in a touchdown-to-interception ratio. So It's not a question of whether he can play the position. It's whether he gets comfortable enough. And the thing about it is, he has time. He has some games to kind of prepare himself to get ready for that playoff run. They're already going to be in.
Right.
So now you'll get a couple of games to get him acclimated to what they do, the speed of the game. He actually made a couple of quality passes, actually one to end the game, late in the game, to end that game. And to continue to drive so they can run the clock out. So it's not a problem. It's not like we're putting somebody in there that hadn't played football,
right,
hadn't played on this level, and hadn't been successful.
Right.
So I think he could probably still be, if you look around this league, he's as good as a lot of starters in this league now.
And no doubt.
So to have a quality backup, this is what I was talking about these other teams that pretty much killed their own season by not signing Kaepernick.
Denver, but go ahead.
Denver, Houston. I mean, we can go down the line. There are a lot of teams that if they would have just swallowed that pride and not colluded,
right,
this wouldn't have been an issue. But Philadelphia, like I said, has a quality quarterback, and I think they'll be fine.
Now, he did go to Kansas City with Peterson prior to going back to Philly, right?
Yes. He was in KC.
So, kind of knows the offense.
Yeah, but familiar with whatever
Peterson. Familiar with whatever Peterson, and familiar with all the terminology and things of that nature.
It's still some, I guess the difference between Foles and Wentz is that Wentz can make plays. When plays break down, he can still try to do something. He can still make scramble. But with Foles, that's less likely. And that could turn out to be an issue, especially, you know, with not having their left tackle So when the protection breaks down, it's like, can they protect him? If the Eagles can protect him, then they might, they'll, you know.
That's what I mean about game planning. I think you'll see more of the uses of your running backs.
You have to play a little safe.
They do have like 12 of them.
I really think it'll be, I think they'll be fine, to be honest.
Okay. All right, question number 5 to end our hot news. D. Will, what word would you use to describe OKC if they don't make the playoffs? Because presently they are in 9th place and out of the playoffs right now. With all the moves that they made, and we had them going 2nd, 3rd, you know, from the West. So your thoughts on that?
Well, I got a couple. I'm going to start off disappointed, confused, upset, and befuddled. I just had to throw befuddled in because I like saying befuddled. But anyway, I believe they will make it in. But as of now, I don't see them doing much. I don't see them making a run considering where they're playing right now. Like I say, I'm baffled on with the three. They got 3 of the top 20 players in the world on their team, and they can't seem to get continuity to play well enough to win basketball games. And that all falls on the coach. Totally falls on the coach. He's the one that should be able to put them into positions in order to win basketball games. Because we all know all 3 of those guys in Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, and Paul George. We know they can play the game at a high level. We've seen it done. So if they're unable to make the playoffs this year, I got one more word for you. Fired. Because he will be fired, meaning the head coach in, what's the boy name from Florida?
Billy Donovan.
That's him. He will be fired at the end of the season if he does not find a way to not only make it into the playoffs, but actually make a run in the playoff series. And with them being in the 9th place right now and seeing they will be the 7th or 8th seed if they're able to get in, they're going to run up against a Houston or a Golden State. They're not winning their first round series. So at the end of the season, I believe we will see Billy Donovan fired. So that's my one word, fired.
So, D-Will, you think he needs to be fired rather than them go ahead and make the move? Either try to persuade Carmelo to come off the bench or go ahead and move
Paul George
before the trade deadline. Because, and the reason I ask you that is because Billy Donovan won with this team with lesser talent last year. So if they go back to playing the way they played, isn't that better? I mean, does he already know the formula for playing for what Russ does, which is let Russ be Russ?
Now, I totally agree with you. Now that falls on Sam Presti, the general manager. Those are decisions that he has to make. But for me, as a head coach, you're supposed to, when you're giving groceries, it's your job to cook the meal. And right now, he's not cooking the meal. So it all falls back on him. Now, if Sam Presti wants to make those decisions and move Paul George prior to the trade deadline or move Carmelo to the bench, That's something that needs to happen immediately. But I believe it still falls on Billy Donovan because regardless of what goes on, you have this team as is right now. And I'm going to say, yeah, he won games last year with that formula, but what did he win? What has he done since he's been in OKC? We've seen the issues that he's had as the head coach, and I really believe that it falls on the head coach when you have this much talent on the floor because what do we always say? Talent wins basketball games. And he has the ultimate amount of talent right now, and he's still not winning basketball games. So I believe that still falls back on him.
All right. Dez on Facebook Live said his one word is travesty.
Yeah, I can use that one too, but tell him to say befuddle. It's really fun.
I get you. All right, well, that's going to end our hot news tonight. And we're about to go to break and come back with some college football awards. But before we go to break, I do have to ask y'all a fun question. Hancock and D. Will and G. Money, please, y'all let me know what you think. Does Baker Mayfield and J.J. Redick have the same daddy?
I don't know about that. They're at least cousins, though.
They got to be related somehow. Hey, what you think?
I just thought they said black people looking like that.
I'm gonna stay away from that one.
You gonna stay away from that one?
You gonna stay away from that one.
Listen, if you go to our website and you look at the article that Baker Mayfield won the Heisman. I know that. I thought that was J.J. Redick. It is no. Just go back and look at it, and y'all let me know.
It might be the same person. You ever see them both in the same room?
Well, Baker Mayfield was shooting three last night then. But listen, we're going to go ahead and go to break. When we come back, SRT College Football's Awards, baby. You listen to Sports Roundtable, srtradio.com on 1100 AM.
We'll be back with more Sports Roundtable on the Worldwide Radio Network. College football season is almost over. Championships are being won and plans are being made for bowl games. But basketball season is heating up. And what goes best with weekend hoops? The best New Orleans seafood restaurant in Atlanta, of course. Come on down to Sports Roundtable Saturday at the Big Easy Grill on December 16th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. You can meet the crew of the best sports radio show in town, enjoy a panel discussion about the big sports stories, and enjoy some great food. If you ask Big H.O., of course, he'll recommend the shrimp. So come on down to Sports Roundtable Saturday, December 16th at the Big Easy Grill at 1193 Collier Road in Atlanta. We hope to see you there.
What's up? This your man, D-Will the Coach, here on behalf of Real Talk Tees. Real Talk Tees is for the players, geniuses, and bosses. For those who hustle, for the fresh, and for the iconic. Real Talk Tees is urban, affordable, vintage t-shirts to help you express yourself. So visit realtalktees.bigcartel.com to order yours today. So how about this? You got a specific mood in mind? Custom orders are available also to help you and yours stand out. So visit realtalktees.bigcartel.com, where what's real lasts forever.
Sports Roundtable.
On Julio's drop, well, you saw that Kurt Coleman like kind of consoled Julio a little bit. Say you were on the other team and you saw their best receiver drop a pass like that. Would you have said anything to him?
Well, Julio's 6'3" and weighs at least, you know, 230 and has 2% body fat. I'm not saying a damn thing to him. He would tear me apart. I'm staying hundreds of feet away.
Only on 1100 AM, the Worldwide Radio Network. The Roundtable Discussion.
What are we talking about?
Hit it!
Roundtable discussion tonight, sponsored by our main man, Real Talk Tees. Get a shirt for every mood. Realtalktees.bigcartel.com. Sports Roundtable back at you. About to go through some of these college football awards, the SRT College Football Awards, that is. If you want to put your awards up on Facebook Live or you want to call us and let us know who you think should win an award, please let us know. 404-603-8770 is the number to call. And actually, you can go to our social media page and put it up. Make sure you hashtag CFBSRT. And that'll fix that. All right, so our Ball of the Year Award, our main man, G-Money, came up with the categories. So the first category, and G, correct me if I'm wrong, is the Baller of the Year. Is that correct?
Yes, Baller of the Year. That'll be the either you think it's the best player, coach, team.
Gotcha.
Anything like any college football related figure.
There it is. All right, so my Baller of the Year this year goes to the UCF Golden Knights for going undefeated and doing what they needed to do after in 2 years they was winless. So shout out to UCF for maintaining and staying consistent this year. College football has to be the hardest sport, well, football actually, the hardest sport to go undefeated in. And they did that. So history making for the UCF Knights. So my ball of the year goes to the UCF Knights.
I will Baker Mayfield, man.
Okay.
I had to take my hat off to him. You know, he had some hiccups on the field, crotch grabbing, tripping with some other teams, you know, other fans actually in the right. stands. So, you know, there were some issues with him running from the police. You know, I guess all that.
He didn't run far.
Be considered as being a baller. He balled out. So, my man Baker Mayfield, who did it on and off the field.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, G, who's your baller of the year?
My baller of the year is San Diego State running back Rashad Penny. Led the nation in rushing, 2,027 yards, also 19 touchdowns. And for him to not be a finalist for the Doak Walker Award, he could have at least gotten a Heisman finalist invite. They only invited three players. I felt like he should get somebody. He was a first-team All-American, so he's clearly at least one of the two best running backs in the country.
Exactly.
So I decided to recognize him for my Baller of the Year award.
Okay, as D. Will would say, befuddled by those
tragedy,
all that. All right, D. Will, your Baller of the Year, buddy.
My Baller of the Year goes to none other than former Alabama defensive coordinator and current UGA coach Kirby Smart. And the reason I gave it to Kirby Smart, my Ball of the Year, is in his second year at Georgia, he gets them into the playoff. That's a big accomplishment. They have a stack team, but he also did it with a freshman quarterback. So I got to give it up to Kirby Smart. He did a hell of a coaching job this year. He showed that he is very much worthy of being a head coach in college football, and especially in the SEC. Last year when they struggled a little bit, you heard the rumblings already, was he the right guy for the job? And he came around this year, only losing one game in the regular season and getting that team as a third seed into the college football playoff. That's a huge accomplishment. So my ball of the year is Mr. Kirby Smart.
Okay, good deal. All right, offensive player of the year next, right? The offensive player of the year is no other than, I'm going with Baker Mayfield, 41 touchdowns, 5 interception, a quarterback rating of 203.8. That is amazing. So on the field, he did what he had to do, and his stats are showing. So Baker Mayfield, you are my offensive player of the year.
My offensive player of the year is Lamar Jackson, who actually had a better statistical year than he had last year. Thing about this is, we look at Heisman Trophy winners a little more critical the next year if they're eligible to come back and play.
Right.
And probably, you want to say if he'd have been on a better team, if they'd have won more games, but they didn't contend for a national championship last year, if you want to be honest about it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, with what he did again on the field to surpass what he did the previous year, Lamar Jackson, my offensive player of the year.
Okay. All right, G.
All right, my offensive player of the year is, I think, one of the – just watch – I didn't get to watch him play too much, but he had some Antonio Brown-type abilities, and that's Anthony Miller, wide receiver from Memphis. 92 catches, 1,407 yards, and 17 touchdowns.
Ooh.
And he had 6 games in which he had at least 140 yards receiving. Just from what I saw, you know, you can look at, with the level of competition or anything like that. Yeah, it seemed like no one could really guard him. Using his speed, he looks like he has great hands. I don't know how he project on the next level because he's 5'10", and anybody under 6 feet, the NFL kind of sticks their nose up at sometimes. But he's one of the most electrifying players in the country to me.
Okay. All right, D. Will, the coach, offensive player of the year.
I know we hate stepping on toes and we don't like picking the same people, but I got to agree with sports superhero. Lamar Jackson is my offensive player of the year. Like you said a little earlier, coming off a Heisman Trophy winning year and to put up even better stats this year, it was remarkable. He went 241 for 399 for 3,489 yards. That's 60% completion rating. And he still put up 25 touchdowns in the air this year. So he showed that he's able to throw the ball through the air. A lot of mock drafts came out today, and a lot of them had him as a second-round quarterback. I'm really not understanding because he is prototypical of NFL quarterback size at 6'3", 211 pounds. So he has the size. We know about the athletic ability he has. So with him putting up those numbers coming off of a Heisman Trophy year, I really got to give it to Lamar Jackson. Even though his team didn't win much, he still put up incredible numbers. So, like I said, I'm stepping on toes, but I'm going with Lamar Jackson, my offensive player of the year.
All right, good job. All right, the defensive player of the year, I am going with Roquan Smith, linebacker out of UGA. When you are a junior and can be the best player on arguably the best defense in the land, you are a baller. So Roquan Smith has done a great job. Actually, D. Will, you can probably speak on this when you come up. But his draft status has gone up, and up. They talking about him possibly now being a top 10 pick. So, Roquan Smith, you are my defensive player of the year.
My defensive player of the year is none other than Bradley Chubb, defensive lineman with the North Carolina State Tar Heels. I mean, North Carolina State Wolfpack. I apologize for that. Chubb is one of those guys that wrecks offenses that you have to game plan for. And that's, to me, what you look for in that standout defensive player. I want you to be able, you have to go into the week saying, this is a guy we have to block. We have to account for him every play, every week, because he's a game changer. He can create that fumble. He can come through in that timely turnover to turn a game. So, to me, Chubb did that. He exhibited that this year. I think he'll be a high round, probably top 4 to 5 pick in the draft coming up, if depending on the combines. For some reason, when they go and put on shorts and tank tops, the book changes on these guys. The same thing happened with DeSean Jackson. I just don't understand. But anyway, Bradley Chubb is my defensive player of the year.
I agree with Hancock. My defensive player of the year is Bradley Chubb. 10 sacks, 72 total tackles. And from what I saw from him, he was very quick off the ball to where it seemed like that the tackle is still like hasn't moved yet by the time Chubb is already moving. One thing I do like is like with defensive ends, everyone always looks at how they rush the passer. I think he was very good against the run as well, to where in a lot of key short yardage situations, he was making the tackle in the backfield. I do think he'll be a top 10 pick at the very least. You can't have too many pass rushers on your team. So if a team doesn't get the quarterback that they want, even though that is questionable in a totally different conversation, I think any team would be lucky to get Bradley Chubb on their team.
Okay. All right, D. Will, who's your defensive player of the year?
All right, my defensive player of the year, it's a little different. And you can call it a homer pick because it kind of is, but it's for a different reason. My defensive player of the year will be none other than Alabama linebacker Sean Dion Hamilton. And the reason I gave Sean Dion, he doesn't have incredible stats. He has very good stats. He had over 60 tackles on the year. But the reason I gave him defensive player of the year is Alabama gave up zero 100-yard rushers up until the game where he got hurt, and they gave up 2 consecutive 100-yard rushers at Nick Fitzgerald, the quarterback from Mississippi State, and also the running back from Auburn, Kerryon Johnson. So that just shows that he was the most valuable player on the number one defense in the country all year for up for 10 games until he went down, and then they started giving up 100-yard rushers like they never seen before. So my defensive player of the year this year is Sean Dion Hamilton, just because of his valuability to the Alabama Crimson Tide defense that he showed that once he went out, they turned into a totally different defense.
All right. You're listening to Sports Roundtable as we are going through our SRT College Football Awards, and we are down to the Coach of the Year. And my Coach of the Year, and it may be anonymous.
Unanimous.
Scott Frost of UCF taking a team that was winless 2 years ago to a undefeated season and taking that into a home job coaching move to Nebraska, where he went undefeated and get a big, big payday. Admire him for staying to finish the job as he will coach the bowl game. But Scott Frost, you are my coach of the year.
Yeah, I second that. Frost was my coach of the year. And since you talked about him so well, I just go with my honorable mention. And that would be Lane Kiffin at FAU.
Okay.
Turning that program into something, I think, I don't know how long he'll be there. But I can promise you, he won't be anybody's homecoming coming up the next couple of years. Because the guy can coach offense. And he, when you play FAU, I promise you better put up some points because they're going to do it. And you'll see that happen in the next couple of years. Like I said, I don't know how long he'll be there because somebody's going to come call. Right. You know, you had to put up a lot of antics and whatever. But my honorable mention anyway is Lane Kiffin. My coach of the year, Scott Frost.
My coach of the year was actually Lane Kiffin.
Okay.
Last year, FAU 3-9 and a total afterthought. Everyone's putting them on their homecoming schedule, as he mentioned. To turn them around, they go 10-2. They win the conference. And I think he's going to be there for a while. Because I still think that other schools and NFL teams will be kind of iffy about hiring him. He had too much too soon. But now that he's starting here, I think he can like build something, turn FAU into something. And he's going to make recruiting high school football in Florida like very intriguing, to where people nationally will pay attention to it, competing with all those other schools, at the very least on social media, if not with actually getting players.
Yeah, that's a good point, a very good point. All right, D-Will, who's your coach of the year?
My coach of the year goes to none other than the head coach of the Miami Hurricanes, Mark Richt. And I had to go with Mark Richt because he took a program in Miami that has rich history, that was in the depths of despair for the last couple of years, and he has turned them around in 2 years and made them a contender way before anybody thought they were going to contend. And for them to go, 11-2 this year, make it to the ACC championship game, and we know they tailed off at the end of the year, losing the last two to Pittsburgh and getting blown out in the ACC championship game by Clemson. But for him to even get them there and have them nationally ranked and back in the top 10 again, that just shows that he did a bang-up job down in Miami, and it's only good things to come going forward for Miami. So my coach of the year is Mark Richt.
Wow, there's some very, very good candidates out there, for real. Those are very, very good candidates. Again, you listen to Sports Roundtable as we're doing our college football SRT college football awards, and we're down.
Did you notice we all picked a coach from Florida? The coaches in Florida.
Wow. Yeah. Well, this trend.
Yeah, we did.
Well, yeah, exactly. Florida got it going on.
Yeah.
All right, so we're down to our buster of the year. And I have two. Jim McElwain, who will stay in the state of Florida. Not only just for the travesty of the offense, but for him to try to conjure up a reason and not be accountable for the way that they were playing with all these allegations about he's being harassed. That's one. Of course, if you listen to the shows, archive shows, this guy's been a bust of the week for me two or three times, and that's Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh, you got to beat Michigan State. You got to beat Ohio State. Hey, you gotta beat Penn State. And now that Scott Frost is at Nebraska, you're gonna have to beat Nebraska. Jim Harbaugh, you have too much cachet to have those kind of numbers against top-ranked teams in your conference. Jim Harbaugh, Jim McElwain, my buster of the year.
Well, just like D. Will said, sometimes you have to bring it on home. My bust of the year is the Florida State Seminole. Going into the year, we looking at a team that was ranked top 2-3 in the nation.
There was two?
And sometimes we say the wheels come off with a car wreck. So, you know, I could almost have said, you know, Florida State being the bust of the year, Jimbo could have been bust of the year and ball of the year from taking a train wreck job and turning it into a $75 million job at Texas A&M. That's baller. So I kind of want to go both ways with it. But I'm going to go with Florida State as being my bust of the year. This doesn't happen to universities that have pedigree like that.
Yeah.
To have a season like this. So, Florida State, you get my bust of the year.
IG.
My buster of the year, because we talked about them the last couple of weeks, is the University of Tennessee football. Like, the everything. The staff, the label, the crew. Everybody. Just from... And it could go back a couple of years to where they should have won the division a couple of times.
Yes.
Basically, look at the whole Butch Jones era, and Georgia was down to where they had the talent to win the division and actually compete for the SEC championship. That didn't happen. And then with the cluster bleep of firing their coach, and then I felt like they called every other coach in America, every other college coach in America, didn't want their job. And just the whole process of that, they don't know what they want to do. They bring back Fulmer, and to where he strong-armed his way into being the coach of Tennessee at first back in 92, and now he kind of strong-armed his way into being the athletic director. I don't know where he's taking this car in Knoxville, but it doesn't look well. I'm looking forward to more jokes from Tennessee next season.
There it is. All right, Marty Terry on Facebook says bust of the year is the Nebraska Cornhuskers. The coaching staff on up.
Marty, bye.
So, there you go. All right, D-Will, who's your bust of the year?
Well, my bust of the year, I'm not going to step on toes with this goal now, because I had Tennessee as a label and a crew, just like G said. But I'm going to go with my honorable mention. And that is none other, my hated rival, the Auburn Tigers. And the reason I'm giving them my bust of the year is for bringing back the one and only Gus Malzahn. Now, I'm going to tell you like this. It's going to happen, fellas. They're going to regret this hire. Not only did they hire him, they gave him $7 million a year. $7 million a year, okay? So my bust of the year is going to be Auburn. And here's the other part. We got to be mindful that Jay Jacobs, the athletic director, has stepped down and will be removing himself from that title. So they will be getting a new AD coming in. So will that new AD hold up to that contract with Gus Malzahn if he's unable to continue to beat Nick Saban, which I don't think is going to happen? Wow. So my bust of the year is Auburn.
Woo. Big. All right, we're down to our last three. Our underachiever of the year, and mine goes to...
The what is it? I thought this was... I'm sorry, what's next? What's
underachiever?
It's underachiever?
Yeah. Okay. Underachiever of the year goes to Mike Norvell, coach, Memphis Tigers.
Wow.
He took a program that I know no one saw Memphis doing any of these things. Memphis actually got ranked as high as 15, 13 or something like that before going into that championship game against UCF.
Yeah, I think they got as high as, that might have been about right. I thought it was about 15.
15 or 13, but the duo of Riley Ferguson and Anthony Miller, they might be this year's best duo in the nation. Baker Mayfield has some other weapons, but the duo of this, it was amazing. 36 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, quarterback rating of 161 for Mr. Riley Ferguson. So that is my underachiever of the year because I know I didn't expect this happening.
Okay. I didn't do it underachiever. I must have missed that category. I thought we were going to game of the year. So
yeah, it was on there too. But G,
I missed that one. Go ahead, G.
Sorry, I may have mistyped something there. I had that as the like kind of the describing the Buster of the year.
Okay, okay, yeah. Okay.
So that's a bonus award from HO.
Okay. There you go, bonus.
We can go to the next award,
which was the who's next?
The Who's Next award.
Okay. DeAndre Swift, sophomore running back for Georgia. I know Dez go like that. As a sophomore, he had 597 yards, 3 touchdowns. I can guarantee you next year with the talent that they bring in at Georgia, he is going to be a person to watch, and he could lead the SEC in rushing next year. So watch out for DeAndre Swift, running back. He'll be a junior next year of the mighty UGA Bulldogs.
Gotcha. My guy who's next plays at a university that we kind of, I guess we didn't give respect all year long. Well, I know I didn't. And this was Wisconsin. Running back Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin, I think, will be the next. He will be one of those in that long line of running backs that Wisconsin seems to put out. They have a big offensive line, and they run the football. That's one thing you're going to get from them is a ground attack. They don't really throw the football effectively. They do it enough to just get by. But the way he runs the football with the speed and power, playing in the Big Ten, I think he will be the next. Now, I think the schedule will get a little tougher than it was this year.
No doubt.
But I don't think that will matter a lot. This guy's legit. And, you know, we've seen backside of Wisconsin, you know, not really pop on the next level. Except maybe Gordon is starting to come into his own now.
Right.
I think the all-time leading rusher, Ron Dane, came out of there. But this is another guy that's in that line. Even Grant with Philly right now is starting to get a little play. But this Taylor kid, I think, is the next. He's legit.
Okay. All right, G.
All right. It's kind of a combination thing, but and you and D Will may have something to say about this. What has Jim Harbaugh lacked since he came to Michigan is a quarterback. And next year he will have Shea Patterson transferring from Ole Miss to Michigan. From seeing him play, he's gotten a lot of Johnny Manziel comparisons. I don't think he's going to be exactly like that, but he's a dynamic player who can make plays. And that's what Harbaugh needs, is a quarterback who can make plays. He'll be coming off a knee injury, but he should be able to get his there shouldn't be an issue with him transferring because of the Ole Miss, like, the sanctions from the NCAA.
Right, right.
But we'll see what Jim Harbaugh can do with a guy who can actually play quarterback and is not a statue like who he's been putting out there.
Okay. All right, D. Will, I'm going to let you go ahead and say something about that before you get your Who's Next award.
It still ain't going to work. Michigan's going to be Michigan. Jim Harbaugh's going to be Jim Harbaugh. Didn't you give him your Buster of the Year, Big A Show?
I did.
He'll be mine next year, so just get ready for it. But on to mine, next player up is Hancock, don't cut me off, okay? I don't want you to cut me off because it's another homer pick. But it's Alabama backup quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. You watch this kid this year, he can throw the ball all over the field. He can make every throw on the field. He's also very elusive. He's not the runner of a Jalen Hurts, but he is a very good athlete. And just from the little bit that we saw this year, I believe he's going to be the next person up. And mark my words, I'm hearing rumblings already. They're going into spring ball, and it will be competition at quarterback. Ooh. At the University of Alabama.
So not only did we get and who's next, we also got some inside scoop.
But D, let me ask you this before we move on.
Mm-hmm.
If Jalen Hurts is able to win a national championship this year, you mean to tell me he's going to come back next year and have to compete for that job?
Well, we haven't won a national championship yet.
I'm just asking.
Yes. Now, if we win a national championship, it may be different. But Nick Saban goes into every year in this competition. So if Tua Tagovailoa can come out and he can play and show that he's a better fit for that position, I don't think Nick Saban will have any issues making that change.
Okay. Wow. Well, we saw what Kirby did.
That's deep.
Mm-hmm.
That was an injury situation.
Yeah. Well,
that's the reason he got in.
They can report an injury.
And what they have to say, injuries should never lose your position.
Yeah.
Exactly. But let me ask you,
so you don't think that would be some kind of dividing factor of the locker room? You don't think there's a lot of guys that have gone to war with this kid for 2 years? I mean, he's been there leading them and winning games for them.
Oh, yeah, he's won games. So that's no doubt. Now, like I say, winning a national championship would be a totally different scenario. But as of right now, just from the inside things that's coming from inside the program, there will be a quarterback competition going into next year.
I believe it. Because I told you when I saw him in spring that I thought it might be a problem this year. But, you know, they held it off. I find it hard that people going, I mean, teammates is what I'm talking about.
You're worried about the locker room.
Right.
You're worried about the locker room.
Exactly.
And that makes sense. But this is not the NFL. We know who runs that locker room. Nick Saban runs that locker room. So whatever he says goes. So if he makes the decision, I believe everybody else will fall in line.
Okay. But last night it was a red state.
We blew the dirt, baby.
That's what I'm saying.
Boy, y'all, I would say. All right, Marta Terry say Swift was his offensive player of the year. So, Mother Terry is chiming in and letting us know. Until our last one, the game of the year, I had two, UCLA versus Texas A&M at the beginning of the season. I think September the 3rd was the date. 45-44 was the final score. It was a heck of a game. It came back, UCLA came back from a big deficit. Can't remember all that went on, but I think that's the game that kind of put Josh Rosen in that NFL maybe top five talk that we're hearing about now. And the next one is the Memphis UCF championship game. What a game. It was very, 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 very exciting. And I watched every snap of the game. So I had two. Know it's a lot to choose from.
Yep.
But those two kind of kept my eye, and I thought that was that let you know the kind of athletes and talent that we have in college football.
Right. I agree with you. It was a hard decision, man.
Yes.
I did like the Memphis and UCF game. Even the week before that, the UCF South Florida game was good, too.
Yeah.
The game I went with, though, was the Ohio State-Penn State game.
Okay.
If you remember, that game came down to really JT turning up and balling out in the fourth quarter to win that game.
Yeah, 13 for 13.
Yeah, he balled out. And the reason I say that was the biggest and best game, I'll go with that one, because the next week, that week it took so much out of them. The next week, Ohio State went to Iowa and got the 50-piece put on.
Yeah.
So leaving it all on the field right then to win that game showed how big and how much it took out of them. And that's what I always talk about when teams have to play those big games. The next week, you never know what team's going to show up.
I agree.
But that game, to me, I'll go with the Ohio State-Penn State game because there was a lot on the line. And even though it was a lot on the line in that Memphis and UCF game, I agree with that, too.
Yeah. All right, G.
I also had the Penn State-Ohio State game. Penn State made all the plays in the first half to where, like, it seemed like they were just – way above, like levels above Ohio State. And then JT Barrett just he kind of showed why he's been this great quarterback for so many decades at Ohio State. he had that great fourth quarter, and you know, this would have been his Heisman moment if he was able to, you know, keep that kind of streak going. Like you said, it took a lot of them. They went to Iowa and just laid an egg.
Yeah.
And even it was such a great game, you still thought that Penn State had a chance to win the conference and win the national championship. Saquon Barkley seemed like, when I saw that opening kickoff that he took back for a touchdown, I was like, this game is over.
Right.
I thought it was over right then, because it took all the energy out of the Ohio State crowd, but they were able to come back in. But it was a pretty good game.
All right, D. Will, game of the year.
Well, y'all took two of mine, which was the Memphis UCF game, which was, like I say, awesome.
Right.
And G took my Ohio State Penn State game because I agree. When Saquon Barkley took home that opening kickoff, not only did I think that game was over, I thought the Heisman was sold up because he was a runaway favorite with the Heisman back in September.
Absolutely.
So those were the two. But since I want to be a little different, I'm going to go with one of the biggest games to me of the year was the Alabama-Mississippi State game. Mississippi State completely ruled that game the entire season. I mean, the entire game. Up until the fourth quarter when Jalen Hurts, and we just mentioned him, he made the key play, which not with his feet, was on a slant pass to the freshman wide receiver who spin out and took it to the house, which that game propelled Alabama into the college football playoff. Because if they lose that game, they have no shot, whether they be Auburn or not, they have no shot of getting to the college football playoff. So the game of the year, they came back and won that game 34-21 when they were down for the first three and three quarter quarters of that game, and they came back to win it. So with all the others being taken, I'm going to take Alabama and Mississippi State.
All right, good deal. And thanks for that. And listen, you can find our awards on our website. So we will post these awards on our website. So be looking out for that. You can go to srtradio.com and you can see our award picks and things of that nature. So that's going to end our college football awards, man, our first annual SRT College Football Award. So that was a good thing. So a lot of people, we're going to have to start getting some trophies or something to kind of pass out or whatever the case may be. So we'll see. But on to the next. We got to go to break. First hour of the show is over. The second hour of the show, we got our main man, Deshaun Tate, in studio coming in, talking a little college basketball. D-Will, I know you want to hang on with us and talk a little bit, but we will be chatting with you on Facebook Live, and I know we will see you next week because we definitely, it's basketball season, and I know you want to talk about Colin Sexton, so we definitely want to do that. So, D-Will, appreciate you calling in from the Gump. Thanks for making that history last night, and thanks for hanging on with us. Be safe on the road, and we'll see you next week.
Yep. All right, fellas, man. Appreciate y'all, man. Y'all have a good rest of the show, man. And I will see y'all next week. Kevin Sean, I said, what's up?
You all already know. And so, coming up, Deshaun Tate, 92.9 The Game. You already know. About to go ahead and go to break. So, let's do it. You listen to Sports Roundtable, srtradio.com on AM 1100.
Are you thinking about changing the station? You're only hurting yourself. Keep listening to Sports Roundtable on 1100 AM.
You are tuned into WWE Peakville, AM 1100.
The opinions expressed during the sponsored programs on this station are strictly those of the program hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of Beasley Broadcast Group, this station, its staff, other advertisers, or agencies.
Are you looking for a new, pre-owned or used car to get you around the city or simply from point A to point B? Look no further. Jay's Used Cars is the place to be. Jay believes your job is your credit, and no matter what your situation is, Jay will get you in a car. Visit Jay's at 3820 Lawrenceville Highway in Tucker and mention Sports Roundtable, get a 10% discount. Go to jaysusedcars.com to check out the inventory. Jay's Used Cars, where they stack them deep and sell them cheap.
There's a lot going on in the world, and your world is always changing. That's why it's important to stay connected. The latest news, the latest entertainment, the newest music. If it's in the air or on the air, it can be in the palm of your hand, wherever you are, with the iHeartRadio app.
iHeartRadio.
Over 1,500 live radio stations from across the country, and over 15 million songs to create your own custom stations. Text IHR to 45495 to download the app or listen at iHeartRadio.com. Standard text and data rates apply.
Basketball season is already underway, and even though you're playing, you want to take your game to the next level. That's where the Bow Bell Basketball Academy comes in. For boys and girls ages 6 and up, Atlanta's own Bo Bell has played and coached basketball all around the world and is here to share his philosophies to help any player maximize their potential. Visit CoachBoBell.com for details about upcoming camps or call 770-912-4104 for more information. Bo Bell Basketball Academy. Maximize your true potential.
Sports Roundtable.
Jameis Winston gets my bust of the week, man, for his speech to his team before the game. He probably cost them 10 points. Because, everybody probably was like, this is my quarterback, man.
This is my quarterback.
He's sitting here licking his fingers
in front of a bunch of grown men
before the game. I know he already took some snaps in pregame. Well, from his center. So, and he licking his fingers talking about eat a duck.
Yeah, they ate an L instead.
On the Worldwide Radio Network 1100 AM.
Uh-oh, Breezy.
Yeah.
Looks like they back for a fifth season, man.
Who that?
Sports Roundtable.
Who?
SRT.
Yeah.
Crew.
Whoa.
SRT. Yeah. They got that realness flowing in they DNA. Damn you lame if you ain't tuned to SRT today. H.O. got that payload when he say so. What you betting on? Okay. Don't get mad at me on fantasy. Break up Kyrie LeBron.
Oh, no.
I be smooth as sports superhero Hancock in the mix. Deal with roll top forever. Real talk, you know who he gon' pick. See where I be with SRT. Behind the glass, that G-Money. They with a strong, I never lose. Six man elite, that's Jay Smooth.
Jay Smooth.
All you other sports radio shows, it's fake news. Believe it. Turn up your radios, cause it's time for SRT Radio.
Yeah.
What up, what up, what up? It's the second hour of the show. Sports Roundtable in the building. Thanks for tuning in. First hour of the show was strictly, pretty much, college football SRT awards. We also had some hot news as we talked about how J.J. Redick and Baker Mayfield are twins. Hancock also talked about the allegations. Keep your hands to yourself and keep your mouth shut in the workplace. Carson Wentz goes down. Nick Foles? Yeah, probably. OKC is not in the playoffs right now. Are you shocked?
Yeah.
And I got one for you, and I'm going to ask Deshaun this later, but I'm going to make sure I ask you this now.
Okay.
Before we go into it. Wiggins and Towns, NB Simmons, who you taking?
Oh, I'm NB Simmons all day. I think Embiid has the best footwork since Olajuwon. And I think Simmons' floor game is a young LeBron floor game. Maybe not as dominant, but the way he sees the floor and plays the game is reminiscent of a young LeBron. He can't score like LeBron, so we're not even talking about that.
Right.
But I'm talking about the way he actually involves people and runs the team. I see a lot of that game. So those two together, health is the only thing to me that stops them. And I think what's stopping Towns and Wiggins is probably the coach and Jimmy Butler being added to the team. It's stunning their growth. I watched them the other night, and it's stunning them. It really is.
Jay, who you taking?
I'm taking Embiid and Simmons.
Is it even close?
It's kind of close. I mean, I guess that you're like, okay, Simmons can't shoot all that well, but he can get to the basket whenever he wants.
Right.
And even though, like, Wiggins and Towns could do that, I think Embiid and Wiggins and Towns can do that. Embiid and Simmons are kind of better at that. So, yeah, I would take them.
Interesting to see what D. Will to say next week. Make sure you remind me to ask him that question. All right, folks, now it's time to get to our real. This is a famous segment because we got our man in studio. But we finna get into the college basketball Sports Roundtable, SRT Roundtable Discussion with our main man, Deshaun Tate.
Per usual. What up, though?
What up, Sparty?
What up, though?
Sparty is in the building.
No doubt. No doubt. Spartans will. Sparty party.
My man.
Yeah, man.
92.9 is the game. Listen, when you see the guy, you know college basketball is heating up. And we got a lot to talk about, college basketball. But before we move into college basketball, the question I just asked Hancock, Wiggins, Towns, Embiid, Simmons, who you taking?
Embiid, Simmons. But let me say this. I got to throw a butt out there. We talking about two guys that are no strangers to being injury prone. This question could come up next month, next week, tomorrow. If we could be, the consensus would obviously go to the guys in that case in which has the most experience, because you can't throw that experience stuff out of the window by any means, So from that standpoint, you would look at it a little different. And I like to think that just within that comparison, I think if Wiggins and Towns found out that folks is having this kind of conversation, I think that might even step their game up a little bit, similar to how Drummond did when Embiid kind of called him out. It's like, oh, you want to talk some, you want to trash talk me? I don't have no offensive game. Okay, let me show you something. In the end, I gotta go with Simmons, and I gotta go with Embiid. I think the Hakeem Olajuwon comparison stuff is still quite a bit premature for me, anyways. The footwork does look good, but because he overall has a skill set that is very similar to Hakeem Olajuwon, the way he can step out and shoot, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't think that Embiid would be what Embiid is right now, and I gotta give him credit for that. I saw the Simmons thing. I saw this written all over him. But the Embiid thing has impressed me. However, it can only really, really impress me if he's able to stay healthy and show me that they can lead the team to a playoff appearance. And then from there, start winning year by year. But, to finish it off, your question, Wiggins hasn't really done anything to get his team to where they're competing for. They're competing for a playoff spot, but they don't even get there. So it almost kind of gets me thinking the bigger question is which tandem gets their team to the playoffs first. I think that'll tell you a lot.
How about that Embiid and Simmons both can make plays for other people that I hadn't seen Wiggins make? I don't see Wiggins making plays for people, and I really don't see Towns either, but I think Towns may be capable, but I honestly think the addition of Jimmy Butler has retarded their progress. I watched them play, man, and it's like they don't play freewheeling or without being encumbered now. It's right. Like they're it's like big brother or daddy has come in and they don't look like they're at ease anymore. You know how you're the man, mm-hmm. and you play with ease, you play with not worried about making a mistake?
Sure.
And I you can almost see them like, I can't mess up here.
Well, that's only going to do one or two of two things. It's either going to make or break. And maybe they needed that little bit of a fire up their behinds a little bit to play under some urgency, some win urgency. Because without that and a proven, I shouldn't say proven winner, but a guy who can definitely help you get to the next level. It's not like Jimmy. Sure, I don't want to confuse this with making it seem almost as if Jimmy Butler has like a winning pedigree, because that he does not have either. However, I like to think that it can do nothing but help, especially if it came at the expense of getting Chris Dunn out of the door, who wasn't helping them. I don't think he had a ton of time either. However, I will say enough to say that Jimmy Butler can bring some good things there, and he knows what it takes to win. I don't think that he had the team necessarily to win, or the coach, rather, to win when he was in Chicago with Thibodeau. And here it is, the same situation all over again. Is it Jimmy Butler or is it Thibodeau? Because one of the things that raises the red flags, in my personal opinion, is Thibodeau runs his teams into the ground before they can get to a point where they can contend for anything.
Right.
However, it's unfair for us somewhat to say that because you still don't know. Now that both of them are in Minnesota, the state of 10,000 lakes, you still now, again, you might not know unless you become successful, and we'll see how successful they can be with the both of them.
Time will tell.
Exactly. Then you can almost think that, did they even trust Wiggins or Towns to be the man to go out and get Butler?
I don't think that was the issue. I think they just needed to add some pieces so that they can get to where
they
want to
be. I mean, I'm with you, but if you wanted to look at it that way, I mean, it's an option, you know.
It ain't working.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's an option. Yeah.
Out west, too, at that. Let's make sure. I mean, out in the east and in the west, you know, it's two totally different.
Exactly.
Know, two totally different things.
Absolutely. So. All right, let's go ahead and jump to some of this college basketball. Your thoughts, Tate, on the first month of the season thus far? Your notes, your thoughts, help us out.
I've liked it, personally. I mean, that might not be saying much just because that's what I do, that's what I love. But right. I think the fact that you have, it's such a forward or big or front court dominant year this year, especially with a lot of young guys, traditional bigs, not just guys. I mean, you're talking about guys that can play with their back up against the basket, guys that's facing the basket, guys that can step out and shoot, guys that are hungry. I mean, I haven't seen this type of year yet where you have so many bigs that are so talented, whether it be, you know, Bagley or Jaren Jackson or DeAndre Ayton or Brandon McCoy or Mo Bamba. I mean, the list goes on and on for a lot of teams that can get some really good quality bigs with tons of potential. I think that it's, for me personally, I think most people with a consensus would agree or should agree that Duke and Michigan State is the two top teams, and then I think it's kind of everyone else. So from there, instead of saying is it this team or that team, my biggest question I would propose to people who love college basketball as much as I do, if there's a such thing, and probably not, where do you stand when it comes to winning a national championship, either Duke and Michigan State versus the field? Mm-hmm. And I just clearly like Duke or Michigan State to cut down the nets in San Antonio. So that's just kind of what I've seen. Comparing Arizona's three losses that they
three straight losses
in the Bahamas at the Battle for Atlantis, and they were number two ranked at the time and then went unranked the following week, deservedly so. I can understand that. I get it. But Florida took three losses and then they remained in the top 25. So I don't know where that, you know, where that stands. I'm not the biggest fan of that. But then you've got consecutive teams. I mean, you've got teams taking consecutive losses. Kansas took two straight losses. Cincinnati took two straight losses. Purdue took two straight losses. And I mean, some of those teams, Cincinnati starting to, all three of those teams actually, well, adding Arizona, starting to turn it around a little bit. We haven't seen what Kansas is going to do yet. But that has kind of struck my mind a little bit. Also, we haven't talked about the 30-second rule on the shot clock. We went from 35 to 30. I think guys are kind of settling into that 30-second shot clock now, trying to get a little closer to the NBA. But I think that that has been better for college basketball outside of the talent. I'm interested to see what's going to happen with Kansas, who's already won, 13 consecutive regular season championships. Will this finally be the year? Maybe, after we've seen some of the miscues of Kansas, that someone knocks them off their perch.
Texas A&M.
I'm still gonna stick with Kansas. Texas A&M and SEC.
Yeah, that's
now.
Right there.
But I'll still stick with Kansas until shown otherwise. And last but not least, these student sections that's counting down the shot clock before the shot clock is actually being counted down to zero and some of these players falling for it. I need to see a little bit better IQ out of some of these players and pay a little bit closer attention to the shot clock and not so much the home field advantage home court advantage. But that's just the beauty of basketball and college basketball, is you get those student sections. I mean, for the people who can't stand and got sour grapes and gripes about college basketball, you have to just take in everything. Those atmospheres make a huge difference.
Now, to Arizona's point, they are being investigated. They had some scandals going on throughout in the offseason with one of their assistant coaches, Louisville, also, and USC. USC was highly ranked at the beginning of the season. So do you kind of contribute those investigations to the downfall of USC and Arizona at this point in time, or are you just like, well, you know?
Maybe some. I mean, at the end of the day, how much do the players really care? I mean, the players is going out there to play so that they can get a check in the next 365 days, ideally for the average guy. Now, we know that that won't be the case for every player, but I think that that's kind of the mindset in which it should be. Maybe not 365 days, but or if you can, all of us would like to get paid faster if we could. So,
yeah.
But from a X's and O's and the way that coaches break down plays and the game and just in general how they approach the game, probably most importantly, with that stuff kind of lingering in the back of their minds, I think that it does kind of have an effect in a sense, because you're still dealing with investigations and a lot of that stuff is still, like I said, just kind of lingering in their minds. So at the end of the day, no excuses. You know, these are teams that got to go out there, especially a team like Arizona, who's expected to be the best team in the Pac-12. They've got a big red target on their backs. And, I mean, Oklahoma State trying to – we talked about Kansas maybe being knocked off the perch. They're trying to do something there and maybe win a conference championship. And then USC trying to contend or compete, you know, for the Pac, for the Pac-12 as well, right along with Arizona. Those are the two top teams in the Pac-12. Prior to Arizona State in the beginning of the season. So I think it has a little bit to do with it, but a ton, maybe not a lot. But at the end of the day, I mean, you got to go out there and play just like everybody else. You got to put your tennis shoes. We call them gym shoes where I come from. I don't know what y'all call them in the South, but, you know, sneakers on the East Coast. We call them gym shoes. You got to put your gym shoe on one at a time just like everybody else.
Yeah. I want to get back to something you said. You said traditional bigs. Mm-hmm. This year has kind of seen the traditional bigs kind of take the lead,
mm-hmm.
which is something we hadn't seen. We've seen a lot of wing players and guards kind of dominate, and that's what we would kind of look for, you know, when we come to tournament time, is the guard play or wing play. Because normally the point, if you got a good backcourt, it can kind of take you far in that tournament.
Sure.
Now, with that being said, if these bigs, these traditional bigs, how do you see them projecting to the next level? Because I heard you say back to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not what they're doing on the next level, what does that say about these guys? Now, I've seen your Bagley kid.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can play with his face, you know, looking at the basket. He might have to play with his back to the basket. I think he's going to have to get a little more size.
Sure.
But he's legit.
Mm-hmm.
He's legit. Who else's game is going to translate to the next level then if they have – These back to the basket guys?
I think all of them can. I don't know if all of them will. That still remains to be seen. I mean, I watched Mohamed Bamba last night, and I mean, he's thin, you know. And I mean, at 17, 18
real
years
thin.
Old,
and Bamba plays
Texas. A lot of these guys aren't. I mean, people make. Oh, what's he gonna do at the next level? Give the kids some time to put on a couple pounds and eat well. I mean, I know everybody not gonna be eating well in college, but at the same time, these guys are not in the same set of circumstances that we are when we was in college. They're on, you know, meal plans and in the weight room every day, and that's their goal. That's their focus. That's the ultimate for them.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just saying, because we see the game go in cycles.
Right. And I understand right now, what you're saying. Yeah, the game is not a back-to-the-basket game.
Right. Or do you see what I'm saying is, what I'm asking is, if these guys are at this level – starting to be more back to the basket, do you see that going and making the NBA go back to a more traditional game?
I think everything, it happens in a cycle, just like everything else in life. It'll eventually go back to that point at some point. How old will we be when that happens? I can't tell you that. But I feel like it's not like these guys are all of these guys are only back to the basket players. These guys are really face-up players first, but the dynamic of being able to put your back to the basket the way some of the guys did back in the day, I feel like if it doesn't hurt, it helps. So if you have a player that can face up and play with his back to the basket, situational, I think that it can do nothing but help. So, I mean, that's just kind of my take on I think this class is going to be a really good class. I'm not saying it's the – 2008, Derrick Rose and all those guys, you know, O.J. Mayo and whoever else was, Michael Kevin Beasley Love. And whatever, yeah, Kevin Love. I'm not saying it's that class. I think that it has the potential to be that class. It's not the the 2003 class with LeBron and all those guys either. However, you know, there's some comparisons to certain players when it comes to similarities, maybe not as much as dominance, but I think in the I can't remember what draft it was. I don't remember what draft Chris Bosh was in, but Marvin Bagley reminds me a lot of a guy like Chris Bosh, a lefty that can step out and shoot a little bit but don't want to abuse it too much. I would like to see – I'm going to tell you what I would like to see. I would like to see the mid-range game get back in the NBA the way that it once was. It seemed like Rip Hamilton was probably the very last one of that, with the exception of Russell Westbrook. I think that he comes down at one speed and pulls up very well. But outside of that, the mid-range game is kind of – I'm sorry?
DeRozan
as well. But outside of a few guys, I'd still like to see the game get back to that point. That's just
crazy. And I see what you're saying. I'm just wondering because we see people on 3-on-1 breaks and they run to the three line. I mean, they don't even finish with layups when it's a 3-on-1 break. So I don't know how the game is going to go back. I know, like you said, things do change, but it seems like it's so far gone from any type of structured, let's run this play to get this look.
Sure.
Everything is, let's move the ball, kick, extra pass, hockey assist to the open guy.
Yeah, it seems
good
like,
shot to the better shot to the best shot.
It seems like it's definitely extinct. I'm just, from a standpoint of what I would like to see happen, that's what I would like to see happen. I think it's unfortunate for the game of basketball, the way that it was designed to be played when James Naismith created it in Kansas in like 1891 or something crazy like that. Don't ask me how I know that. But regardless, it's unfortunate that the NBA came down to a bunch of, can you run? Yeah. Can you jump? Yeah. All right, you're hired. You know, you guys are shooting 3-point shots when they can't even make layups. You know, you got guys that can dunk the basketball, you know, dunk the basketball, can't lay it up, shoot 3-pointers, but can't shoot free throws. Those are free. People forget about it. Those are free. That's a free space on a bingo card, you know, and you don't have that as an element in a lot of guards. Don't have that. I mean, who are we talking about? I think it's a little bit more than a shoulder injury for Markelle Fultz. He's not a great free throw shooter by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that the shoulder has something to do with it. Trayvon Duval is another one. Can you believe that of that starting five that includes Bagley and Carter and Grayson Allen, all those guys, he's shooting like 16%, yeah, I think, from three and like 60%, a point guard. An elite point guard, the number one point guard in the class coming in, shooting 60% from the free throw line, which I think is like fourth best.
I thought you were talking about Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, well, you probably would have mistaken it for Lonzo Ball, but I hate to see that. That's something that's something that bothers me. However, everybody's not going to be blessed with the ability to be able to shoot. Now, the free throw line thing, I think, is not an excuse for a guy like Trayvon Duval. And I'm not trying to rat on him at all or rank on him, because I like Duval. But as a point guard, an elite point guard for a team that can win national championship, they won't win no national championship if he ain't able to knock down wide open shots. I mean, you sit back and watch the defense. The people out there listening right now, watch Duke the next time they play. The opposition will sit back.
Go under the screen.
And let him... they will go down and double on Bagley or find another guy that they're studded with NBA talent on that team. They'll sit back and let him shoot the ball and dare him to go to the line because they know that he ain't gonna make it.
If he went to the basket and he could score, I've seen him go. He can't finish at the rim.
He's not the greatest finisher, but I will say this: I think that him finishing at the rim is improving.
I must not have seen it yet.
Yeah, it's coming, and he does, and I don't know how much more he does it than the next guy. I think that it's shown a little bit more because it's him and it's because it's Duke and he's a point guard and you're supposed to be able, and I get it. I mean, granted, we're only, 11, 12 games into the season. We still got some time to go.
I watched him 4 or 5 times, and each time he's having trouble finishing, which is really the thing that I'm more disappointed in is the finishing at the rim, because a lot of them I think he could.
And he could do that.
Missing them.
And he has the ability to do that. I think he's one of the better point guards at finishing at the rim, believe it or not. I think it's there. I just think that he has to get settled into the college game, and he has to kind of slow down a little bit. And I'm going to tell you what is supposed to be happening in situations like that. And this is one of the downfalls of Duke, is besides the fact that they don't go very deep, so they can't throw somebody else in there, they don't have a ton of leadership. There's only one senior on this team, and that's Grayson Allen. And he's not the most vocal person in terms of getting his team, you know, together and during some of those huddles after a foul and gather around in the paint and stuff like that. You haven't been seeing a lot of that. So I think that the leadership from that standpoint might be lacking a little bit. And that's when you need someone like that on that team to pick a guy up if he's not shooting particularly well.
I wanted to go back to the question about like shooting threes versus layups, like on fast breaks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the rules kind of forced coaches or teams or players to do that, to where it's layups or threes, dunks or threes. Do you think that the rules need to change, or do you think like the NBA and college basketball need to change the rules to allow for a more Mm-mm. open game or skill game, to where back to the basket, to where a different, more varieties of play?
Mm-mm. No way. We're already catering to these guys already enough. It's already a players' league as is. We're not changing rules up. We've already changed enough rules for players. And I get it. Some people are going to say, well, they did it for Jordan. They did it for, you know, Hackershack, you know, this person, that person, whatever. But I just think that in that case, you're not only ruining the quality of the game, but you're also watering the game down a little bit when you start catering to them. I mean, they're already making a boatload of money, and I mean, I'm not knocking them for that by any stretch of the imagination. However, I don't think that you change the rules. And I mean, Golden State has probably messed it up for everybody being able to play small ball. You put Draymond Green at the five in some situations, a lot of times at the four, and guys that can step out and shoot, and it's like we have a better chance, guys, at hitting a three-pointer, which I think is absurd, than it is to finish at the rim or whatever the case may be. And I think that's ultimately where it comes from. But I think where you have your hidden gems and some of your jewels on your teams is guys who can say, you know what, I'm going to the rack and I'm going to finish strong and I'm going to get the one and I'm going to knock my free throw down and we're getting back on defense to play, you know, to play deep. We're getting back on the opposite side of the ball on defense to play that and get a, hopefully force a turnover and go down to the other side of the floor. That was the old Duke. Right now, Duke is having some issues between trying to decide between a half court, between a zone and trying to do their original matchup in man. And I think that's where they got a little caught up with Boston College. And they'll be fine. Don't get it twisted. Man. Duke is still Duke, and Duke's going to be fine. But they got some things that they need to figure out.
I think he has such big bodies. I don't think he's comfortable with these big guys playing perimeter defense away from the paint.
Sure.
And it looks like to me he's taking that page from Syracuse to say this 2-2-3 matchup or 2-1-2, whatever you want to call it.
He's got the length.
He's got the length to play it. And you know, he can help. They can recover. I mean, with the length they have,
mm-hmm.
you can actually extend the zone so far.
Sure.
You cover so much of the court, which leads me into one other thing.
Okay.
With these guys getting so much bigger and athletic, and I thought this was something when I heard it before, it was just stupid. Do you see them possibly making the court bigger and raising the goal?
I would hate that. I just like the game the way the game is. You know, 94 feet is the same way all across, you know, all across the board. Keep it as is. I don't want to change too much. If guys is growing and getting bigger and faster or whatever, go out there with a bigger and faster crew or a smarter crew with a high IQ club and go out there and beat the other guys that everybody's raving about that has all the length and has all the talent and has all the this and has all the that. I think that that's how you do that. But I'm not a fan of changing too many rules. I don't know. I'm just one of those guys. I don't know. Old soul.
The reason I asked about that is, like you were talking about, like the mid, there's no one has a mid-range game, or you don't see that out of a lot of players.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to bring something like that back, you kind of have a way to where there's some kind of value
right.
to a mid-range shot
mm-hmm.
to where like it's pretty much like it's frowned upon for anybody to take a mid-range jumper. That's why, you know, you like not a lot of people who pay attention to all these analytics like Carmelo Anthony style play or DeMar DeRozan or other players you mentioned, because they take mid-range jumpers and it's less valuable than a layup or dunk. It's still worth 2 points, but because of distance, it doesn't, it's not as valuable, so it's kind of discouraged. Go, like, take a couple steps back and shoot a three.
Go look at rotoworld.com or basketballreference.com and go look at the 3-point percentages from players within the NBA over the last, start off with the last year to the last 3 years to the last 5 years to the last 10 years, and you can see how it has significantly gone down because guys don't take those shots anymore. I feel like, again, if it doesn't help, it only hurts. If it doesn't hurt, it only helps. Build it around where you can get some of those mid-range shots off. I mean, I get it. There's a lot of guys going zone and stuff like that, but I just personally feel like, you know, you get to a point where you're able to shoot mid-range jump shots. That adds another dynamic. The closer you are to that goal, the better your chances are of making it. I mean, I think we can all agree with that. That is the algebra part of basketball. You know, I mean, I also challenge anyone listening or any of you guys to watch a game. Look at how disgusting the game has become. See how many 3-point shots go up before a 2-point shot goes up. It'll almost make you cringe a little bit and almost have you ready to change the channel.
But that's the thing, though. See, you go back from an era to this era.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are playing now only know this era.
Sure.
And that's what's happening, is that basketball is just 3-pointers or, like you said, layup or dunk. I watched the other night, James Harden had shook somebody and stayed right at the key area.
Mm-hmm.
He took 2 dribbles back.
Sad.
To shoot the 3 and knocked it down.
Probably made it, yeah.
But the thing is, that's the thing. You can shoot, what, so many 3s add up to 2s, whatever it is. It's like every 3 2s equals 5 2s or something like that.
I'm not good at math. If you ask me 2 plus 2, I might tell you 22.
We'll work on the numbers and shapes tomorrow. But what I'm saying is, there's a more valued shot right now that it's looked upon, like G said, frowned upon. If you take that 3 a foot inside that line and you could have stepped back and shot the 3 and made it.
I get
like
it.
All the analytics guys like discourage a mid-range jumper.
And the key is going to be, like you're saying, the key to that changing, somebody's going to have to win a title by shooting the 2.
That way.
Because if Golden State continues to win, even Cleveland won, shooting the 3.
Sure.
And you look at Houston, successful.
Well, they set a record last night against the Hawks.
Until that changes, and maybe another Shaq, which you and I have this conversation all the time.
And D-Will said the bigs are coming back just like running back.
Yeah, if they come back and they find that next Shaq, that next Kareem, maybe, and they come in and they actually win a title,
maybe
it flips.
You think these are different kind of bigs, though, now.
Yeah.
They're able to step out and shoot threes. But
having the skill set to do what you said, being able to do it in situations that makes – if the value of him having his back to the basket, like Embiid, he, like last night, he didn't shoot a 3. He faced up and gave a shook move and shot the 2. And it was a mid-range shot, but the value of the situation was big because it was in overtime and they needed that shot.
But he has the skills to do all the others.
I agree.
What would have happened with a Shaq now? What would they do now with Shaq?
Fire?
No. What they do is but what I'm saying is, if you're a coach, what would you surround Shaq with?
Shooters.
And you'd still be shooting 3s. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd probably start in through the post, get the double team to come down, he'd kick out, and the 3 would be going up.
Mm-hmm.
So he would probably be not a 20,000-point scorer now.
Agreed.
It's still going to be a 3-point
but
game.
But just imagine somebody with a talent of with a magnitude of that talent and not being able to put it to work and put it to use. I mean, somebody could be the creator of like a Shaq right now, but it would never transform. And that was another thing I was going to say real quick is that I talked to Dwight Howard And Dwight Howard told me the exact same thing. He said, look, everybody wants to talk about how I'm not able to defend. I'm not the same person. I'm not the same player I used to be. But you got to remember, when he was training and when he was coming up to play in this league,
yep.
he was taught that you're going to be playing against these traditional bigs. It wasn't no running out to the three-point line and all this kind of crazy stuff to defend three-point shooters. So, yes, things will change, but you didn't – at once you get to a point where it changes and it transcends into that, you've kind of already set in your ways on what you've learned and trained to do. So, I don't know. I just think that it's a little bit of a cop-out. I understand that where we're going within the game or whatnot, but I think Joel Embiid is a very good example as to how someone can dominate a game the way he even uses the backboard.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen nobody use the backboard like that since Tim Duncan. Now, I know that it wasn't that long ago. However, I like what Embiid has been able to do because he's showing that you can still have a face up.
All right, go ahead, G.
So, like, in that regard, I think, like, with Dwight Howard, I'm not sure what exact year the rule was changed, but basically in the NBA, you're allowed to play some form of zone.
Yes.
And I think that significant rule change has kind of changed how teams play to where, well, we can't get to the basket. That's why there are fewer block shots. That's why Dwight Howard seems less effective on defense than he actually is, because teams are shooting more threes. But do you think that the NBA should... I know you're not like with a whole bunch of rule changes here, mm-hmm. but I think zone defense has had that kind of impact to where teams are shooting more threes and there's less value in a post player, back to the basket type player?
Maybe a little bit, but I think it's more on the case that I think that players are lazier now. So the zone is easier for them. I mean, you do have to work at a zone, but teams aren't even smart enough to move the ball around and make zones work for their money anymore. So, I mean, it's like the ball isn't even being passed around enough times before a shot goes up. I mean, I even challenge you guys to watch certain games to see how many, trying to figure out what I'm trying to say here. But do you know that you can come back to a game in a game, being down in a game, by taking two-pointers that are a lot easier than it is to take threes, and you almost shooting yourself out of an opportunity to come back or to keep the lead?
Well, don't watch Houston. No, they shoot three,
and that's exactly why they want. Yeah. And that's exactly why Houston won't win a championship.
Don't watch Houston. All right, real quick, let's get through these questions real quick. Most surprised team, most disappointed team in college basketball thus far.
Surprise team is obviously probably the consensus of Arizona State, probably. I mean, I think that the number five ranking is a bit much, but they're undefeated. They've earned it. They went to Lawrence, Kansas. Not many people do that. They came out with a win convincingly. So they're one of the surprises. TCU and Seton Hall. I really like Seton Hall. They're going to have a tough one coming up with Rutgers real soon. So that's the Battle of New Jersey. But a TCU, Jamie Dixon has gone back to his alma mater and is playing very well. Kentucky is on the fence for both. I think they've surprisingly disappointed me a little bit. They've won some games, but they've snuck out of them. However, you got to give credit to teams that are able to still come away with wins. Kentucky has a team that has probably the deepest and most talented front court in all of college basketball right now, and you would probably never really know it. I like what Hamadou Diallo is able to do from a guard standpoint, as well as Quade Green. They don't have a ton of depth at the guard position, but I think that they've been a little disappointing, and they have definitely surprised me from a disappointment standpoint. I think obviously you got Kansas there, but it's still early for them, still premature. We'll see how they bounce back against Nebraska at Nebraska. Minnesota, I think Minnesota came out really strong. I think they'll finish strong. I think they're the second best team.
Remember, I told you they was a good team. But
they're the second best team in the Big Ten behind Michigan State. It's not Purdue or any of those other guys.
Right.
And they'll come to show it once you see them play at home in the barn. Indiana, obviously, but Indiana's got some work to do, especially after getting, you know, Archie Miller, a brand new coach, a brand new system. They played Duke tough. So they're going to play teams tough at home. for when they get up for them. But there's times when they won't, and Indiana State was the first team to show that. And last year being Fort Wayne. The last two, Florida with their three losses and a bounce-back win against Cincinnati, which they better had won.
Yeah.
And then the last one is probably USC, who has tons of talent. But Andy Enfield ain't did nothing since Dunk City and Florida Gulf Coast. So from that standpoint, I'm almost thinking like they'll get it together soon, too. I just don't know how deep of a run. But the biggest year is one of the biggest years probably Kentucky, who I don't think has everything together from a chemistry standpoint and or from a standpoint of just having an identity in general.
All right. Sadly, Michael Porter gets hurt, not going to play his season, freshman season. Mm-hmm. He was probably, arguably, a consensus number one or two pick coming up in this draft. With him being hurt and with all of the guys we've seen, like Alton, Bagley, Trey Young, Jesus Christ, he's a monster. Colin Sexton, things of that nature. Who goes number one?
The bag man.
So now, you know the Hawks got the worst record in the league, right?
Okay.
If you're the Hawks, if you happen to get this number one pick, you picking Bagley.
It ain't even a question. However, let me say this.
I'm just trying to get our hopes up.
The Bulls actually have the worst record.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
But the Hawks are like a half game ahead of the Bulls for the worst record.
Yeah,
they might as well be the worst.
Exactly.
I'll say this much without saying too much. I don't know if I trust the Hawks in making the right decision.
No. Travis Sleet. Come on, man.
I mean, realistically, he did a good job with bringing in John Collins. And I like to think that he'll make the right decision. I'm not sure how much I believe in the Hawks or that the Hawks will make the right decision. There's a kid. Is it Slovenia? I'm not sure. His name is Luka Doncic. Luka Doncic.
The 6'5 shooting guard.
Or a little bit bigger than that, but correct. And he's moved he's moved around a little bit within the leagues out there in Europe. So, he's getting a little bit better competition than he was out there. But I will say as much to say that that sounds like an ideal Atlanta Hawks pick. And me as a Detroit Piston fan, and I don't even want to bring it back up, but we know what they did in their draft.
Hancock talk about it
all the time.
With Darko Milicic. So,
yeah.
But outside of that, I don't know if I trust the Hawks to make the right pick. I know what they like and what fits the system. And honestly, I'm not sure that Marvin Bagley, I call him the bag man, I'm not sure that he fits it. A European player does fit it, but they would be the most idiotic and silliest organization, as nice as they have been to me of an organization that the Hawks has been, I don't trust them to make the right pick. I think if they get number one and Bagley is there, I think they'll have no choice. But I'll tell you this much. If the Hawks have the number two pick and someone else has number one, and one of those GMs, because we know that GMs have the reputation of making silly decisions. We know that. If Markelle Fultz and some of the other ones haven't shown you otherwise already.
Right.
If a GM is silly enough to pass up on Marvin Bagley at number one and go somewhere else with it, DeAndre Ayton, whoever, and the Hawks is number two, I don't trust them to make Marvin Bagley. If they're number one and he's there, obviously, because it's number one, then I can see them taking Bagley. Outside of that, I don't think that they'll take the pull. I can see a DeAndre Ayton or Luka Doncic or someone else before I can see Marvin Bagley. But he's hands down. I'm not going to call him the best player in college basketball. I hate to say that, but I definitely think that he is the number one pick for sure.
Wow. Going back to the Duke thing, Trayvon Duval, you got him as one of the best point guards. I love Trey Young.
Oh, I love Trey Young.
I love Trey Young.
Awesome family. Awesome family. I talk to his dad weekly.
Yeah.
I mean, this dude's a killer. When they be making these comparisons to Stephen Curry, I'm not saying he's as good as Stephen Curry. I want to be clear. but he has a Stephen Curry type of game. Now, that is one that I don't have a problem with shooting the basketball.
Trey Young is awesome.
From far out. He played Oklahoma. If you never seen this kid, Trey Young, play before, this is a real treat. I saw him over at the Peach Jam in North Augusta, South Carolina, and he was the most impressive. I saw Bagley out there. I seen Sexton out there. Everybody in this class, Ayton, you name it. Now, he had Michael Porter Jr. on his team, and I told everybody, this kid made – everybody's, oh, Michael Porter Jr. this, MPJ that. I said, I get it. He's a talent. He's skilled. I'm making no question about it. However, this kid, Trey Young, made him look just that darn good. I like Trey Young, man. Right now, as far as guards in the draft, it's a Colin Sexton, Trey Young competition right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always take it with a grain of salt, so I check him out. Like, I look at Bagley. Bagley is legit. I'll give y'all Bagley.
A lot of other folks
I've been a little skeptical on. But I'll check out Trey Young.
He's lacking in size a little bit, and he can be a defensive liability from time to time. But this kid can really go.
He can go.
Trey Young.
Trey Young.
Number 11 for Oklahoma.
Yes.
And he light-skinned.
And that's always a plus in my book. You light-skinned, you already get an automatic. Remember we talked about that free space on the bingo card?
That's it right there.
You light-skinned, boy. And big ears, yeah, you get my vote.
All right, well, I'm going to check him out.
All right, man, before you go, or before we go, I mean, we got to go with you. Give us a team that could slip up on some folks that ain't nobody paying attention to, kind of under the radar.
I mean, to make a Final Four run or just to make some
just
noise?
To make some noise. Maybe not a Final Four run, but just to make some noise, just to get somebody attention. Like,
I think Seton Hall is really good. I really like Seton Hall. I mean, they remind me so much because they're tough. They're not the deepest team in the world, but between Angel Delgado and Powell and Desi Rodriguez and those guys, I mean, those guys can go. Those guys are really good. And then on top of that, you got to see UNLV play. They've got a kid named Brandon McCoy. We talking about all these other bigs.
Yeah.
They've got a kid named Brandon McCoy. Not only go check his game out, but until you can watch him play, because they come on pretty late at night, until you can check out UNLV, go look at some of his numbers. And he's had some really good games. One of them against DeAndre Ayton, who's pretty clear to be a top five pick in this year's draft. This is a really deep draft. I like UNLV. And, I mean, there's some pretty good teams in the Mountain West, too. So they're not just going to be beating up on anybody.
Wow, okay. UNLV and Seton Hall. Now, Seton Hall has played some real decent ball. They kind of remind you of the toughness of a Villanova team back then. You know, a couple of years ago, they kind of remind senior Leighton team, real tough. They rebound well. They blue collar sort of, and Xavier kind of puts me in that mindset as well. But Xavier has been on the map. I'm surprised that Cincinnati struggled this part of the year. But I think with exams and things of that nature, these things happen with these teams. Now after this break, I think Cincinnati is one of the highest scoring teams in their conference, and I think they will bounce back because I think that they have what it takes. I'm not sure about their coach. Their coach kind of crazy.
Can I give you one more free space on the bingo card?
Please, because
I got a couple of teams I want to throw out there.
Okay.
So you can't say I didn't tell you when it's Selection Sunday roll around. Vermont is going to shock some people.
Okay.
Vermont has a really good team. MTSU, Middle Tennessee State, is still going to be right there in the mix of things to try and make another run. Right here locally. Georgia Southern has a really good team, and you can never go wrong with teams like with Texas Arlington. You know, those are just about three or four, maybe five teams to keep your eyes out and open for.
What about TSU?
I can't go as far as saying TSU. I can't give. You know, I'm all for my people, man. But I can't go as far as saying
TSU. Hey, Mike Davis out there. That's his score?
Texas Southern.
Indiana coach.
Yeah.
And UAB for what it's worth.
Exactly. Hey, man, we want to appreciate Tate for coming in.
Thank you.
Doing this thing, man. College basketball expert, 929 Games on Deshaun Tate. We got to get up out of here. Tate, before you leave, go ahead and give us some shout-outs for you.
Man, shout-out to you guys just for having me. My boy D. Will, man, that's listening. Just appreciate everything that you guys, everybody that's listening, keep supporting SRT, man. Like, if you don't do nothing else,
there it is.
Say your prayers before you go to bed, eat your vitamins, and make sure you listen to SRT. Tate's Take Sports, TATESTAKE Sports, got a really, really awesome podcast coming up. And a really awesome website coming up called Driving Baseline. That's all going to be for 2018. So keep your eyes and your ears open.
There it is. All right, man. I want to shout out everybody who listens. Shout out to Tate. Shout out to D. Will, man. Be safe on that road, man. We about to get ready to get up out of here. You already know, if you don't like it, learn to love it, because it's the best thing going today, baby. SRT hand. Let's roll.
Shout out to Georgia Thunder. I just want to give my 6U team. Oh, they 2-0, baby.
There you go.
2-0. Boogie playing like Lonzo. He can't shoot.
Oh, my
but
God.
Anyway, it's all good. Anyway, Boogie, I'm headed home, baby.
Light skin, baby. Don't forget about them light skins with the big ears. SRT, make sure you keep it up.
It is your main man, H.O. from Bankhead. R.I.P. Moms, R.I.P. BC. And if you love the show,
tell a friend.
And if you did,
in honor of D. Will, Alabama, stand up.
And we out. Peace.
College football season is almost over. Championships are being won and plans are being made for bowl games. But basketball season is heating up, and what goes best with weekend hoops? The best New Orleans seafood restaurant in Atlanta, of course. Come on down to Sports Roundtable Saturday at the Big Easy Grill on December 16th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. You can meet the crew of the best sports radio show in town, enjoy a panel discussion about the big sports stories, and enjoy some great food. If you ask Big H.O., of course, he'll recommend the shrimp. So come on down to Sports Roundtable Saturday, December 16th at the Big Easy Grill at 1193 Collier Road in Atlanta. We hope to see you there.